trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
Amazing.
I didn't know nothing about it.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Collision. This is the place where sports and politics collide at your home for jazz and justice. The place where we change the world one broadcast at a time. That would be WPFW 89.3 FM. I'm Dave Zirin, joined as always by activist, artist, poet, author, and former NBA player Etan Thomas. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. Also joined by one of the finest chroniclers of the modern age of protest, Chuck Modiano. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, sir?
I'm doing great. This is, of course, Pledge Drive Week. People can support the show, support the station, 202-588-9739, WPFWFM.org. That's the way to do it if you want to do it. An incredible show that we have for you this week. Chuck, do you want to tell us who our guest is going to be?
Sure. At the bottom of the hour, 10:40, we have Janice Lewis-George joining us, council member for Ward 4, but more importantly than that, mayoral candidate. Janice has announced that she will run for mayor, and we're going to get her thoughts on why she is doing so and hear from her, so we're excited about that.
Excellent. Etan, a huge question for the city right now in terms of where it's going to go after Mayor Bowser's term. Are we now a city under the thumb of the federal government? Is this our new reality? Is the new reality one where the people have more power? What do we have to say about ICE in our communities? These are all huge questions that a mayor is going to have to answer. I really look forward to this interview.
Let me say this. I tried for months to get either Mayor Bowser or a representative from, her office, somebody even associated with her to come on the show to discuss her, because we had some great discussions about Mayor Bowser, some definite valid critiques. And when you listen to the people in the community, whether they're protesters, people at Busboys, people at, just around D.C., the Wizards games, all around D.C. She was kind of taking a beating, after the takeover with Trump. And, she made the statements and she came out and said, they kind of misconstrued my words a little bit. And, it was looking as though she was very non-resistant, I'll say that word, to everything that Trump was doing. And people were looking at different people like, Governor Westmore, the governor of Chicago, the mayor in Chicago, different people who were very vocal and asking Mayor Bowser, why don't we hear that from you? And we heard a lot of people say, well, it's different in D.C., she can't do it because of this and this. And I wanted to get her on or a representative on for her to explain herself. And they weren't interested. That's the bottom line. We tried. WPFW, we tried. So, now we're going to talk to somebody who is going to fill her shoes or has aspirations to replace her. And, on this show, we're definitely open to having those discussions and those, asking people the questions and getting the answers that the people in the community want to know. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about WPFW, because, you know, a lot of places, we're not necessarily endorsing anyone. We just want to ask them the questions. You know, exactly. what is your position on this topic? What is your position on this topic? And I think that is a very powerful, you know, aspect of WPFW that we're allowed to do that.
Well said. But I also think that these candidates have a responsibility to come to local media, to come, because we know who listens to our show, voters. And so I think if you're going to be run for office, you should want to come on WPFW. You should want to come on The Collision, and you should have to answer tough questions, because, Chuck, these are tough times. And whatever people think politically, people do have the right to answers to these questions, and not mealy-mouthed, well, we're going to have to see what happens. Well, it's a very delicate dance with the federal government. It's like, we want to know that you're going to take a side or that you're not going to take a side. That's what we want to know. And even mayors like the mayor of Boston, Michelle Wu, like, she's not some big lefty firebrand, and she has stood up to Trump on the basic moral and ethical question, or I should say principle, that you're the president, I'm the mayor, this is our city in Boston. You don't get to say how our city is policed, and you don't get to criminalize our residents. And she's not even some big lefty. So I don't think it's too much to ask these candidates for direct answers to these complicated questions.
I agree. So what will you do different than Bowser? And, you know, in many respects, I'm of the belief that Mayor Bowser did not run again because that her time was up. The writing was on the wall. People saw how much she collaborated with Trump. But what I think was exposed to the world, and we've talked about it on this show, has been going on through the balance of Mayor Bowser's tenure. I saw it firsthand covering the uprisings in 2020, where at times she asked she asked Donald Trump's DA, Michael Sherwin, to prosecute harder on protesters who were illegally kettled. And Michael Sherwin was saying, wait, we can't do that. We saw with the encampments last year that were raided, at George Washington University encampments, because Lauren Boebert forced a hearing on Wednesday, and the hearing was canceled, and it was canceled because Bowser raided the encampment. So if you're going to do whatever Lauren Boebert or Trump wants to do anyway, then what is the difference between you being mayor or Trump being mayor or Lauren Boebert being mayor? And these are the questions we have to ask all candidates moving forward.
Well, that's why it's so important that we have the candidate coming on at 10:40. It's so important indeed. And every candidate is invited to come on our show, regardless of your politics. You're going to get tough questions. You're going to get no favor. And that's what we're all about. And
let me ask you this. I want you to explain it a little bit, because I get this question so many times and so many people saying this, and I've heard you explain it, and I can't quite articulate the way that you did the one show that we had a few weeks ago. But explain for everybody that statehood thing with the reasoning why, you know, people from her camp, I guess, have given the reason as to why she couldn't stand up to Trump the way that so many people in the community wanted her to. Just explain what that theory is, and then, of course, why you don't pretty much agree with that theory.
No, absolutely. Well, I mean, well, and Chuck, you could come in on this too, because, you know, that's a great question, and it's got a lot of angles. The number one thing, statehood, first of all, the statehood movement, it arises out of the Black freedom struggle. It runs very deeply in the marrow of the bones of this community. It goes back many, many decades. Generations of people have fought for statehood. Because Washington, D.C. is the capital city, it's complicated, because we also have one home rule. We have home rule, but we don't have statehood. And we are still a federal city. And that gives the president powers over policing of our area that are more direct and less, let's call it, judicially ambiguous than other cities. Now, that hasn't stopped Trump from going into these other cities. That's the first thing to say. because I guess laws don't matter anymore, as many, many people have pointed out. Like, only the laws he wants to follow matter. But let's get to those laws about D.C. and about being able to police D.C. From that federal city perspective. Yes, the president is allowed to order that, but there has to be compelling evidence of some sort of emergency to do so. Like, Lyndon Johnson brought tanks out into the streets during the Vietnam War, because frankly, within 5-7 blocks of the White House, there were people, particularly after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, ready to put this city down to the ground because of what this country and its racism did to swallow up Dr. King. This is not that situation. Crime at a 30-year low. And that, by the way, that statistic is on Trump's own Justice Department website. Crime at a 30-year low. And that, yet the emergency was that the city was awash in crime, and he painted this picture like it was somehow like this inferno that was on fire, and therefore we need troops. Of course, the troops then come in and they have nothing really to do except mulch and pick up garbage. And a lot of us said, though, at the time, you're putting people out there with guns, though, in the streets. Horrible things can happen. And of course, we had the horrific shooting that took place a couple of weeks ago. Something those of us who are against the power of the gun had been warning against for some time. So, but here's the thing, Etan, that I think I really would hone in on, and then Chuck definitely come in too on this, is that Mayor Bowser accepted the logic. Said, this will help with crime. We appreciate areas where we can work together. Let's talk about how we can work together. And then when people pressed her more, she said, look, this isn't Chicago. This isn't LA. I have limited abilities to push this back. Now, it's a little bit different than, say, the mayor of Baltimore, Brandon Scott, who held a rally at the Greyhound bus terminal the day of the big DC rally to send off Baltimore people coming to defend our autonomy here in DC. Like, just because the laws are limited does not mean there were not 1,001 avenues for her to stand up for us, for the citizens, for the people being harassed by ICE, for her to create a political response to what Trump was ordering, because as we've seen in other cities, the legal response doesn't matter because they don't care about laws. The only thing pushing them back is the political and the physical response, and Bowser had no taste for that, no desire for that, no ability to facilitate that. Chuck, anything I didn't say that you want to throw in?
I mean, I thought you laid that out very nicely, but over the years covering protests, my opinion of Bowser changed. I think sometimes we approach Bowser that everything is a capitulation. Everything is giving in to Trump. But if you go back to the beginning, Bowser campaigned for Mayor Bloomberg to be president. Mayor Bloomberg helped fundraise for Bowser. They have an identical stop and frisk policy. For some reason, Michael Bloomberg's stop and frisk policy got national attention, and we rightfully said this is depressive. But when the same reports came out, and this is pre-2020, same reports of stop and frisk came out in DC, and the same protests against the jump out boys, for those who don't know, they're in white vans, they jump out and they harass young black kids in Anacostia. When those reports came out, there was no outrage whatsoever. And I, over the years, had just come to the conclusion of, instead of saying Bowser is capitulating. This is Bowser. Like, maybe Bowser has a right-wing ideology. Maybe the agreement comes so fast that a lot of Bowser's policies, if you were to strip away who was actually the politician, I used to do this with school kids. We would give the position. We wouldn't have a name. We would say, these are the positions of the person. What do you think about them? If we didn't know these positions were Bowser, you might think you have a Republican right-wing mayor. I am just telling you based on position and policy, but because people are in love or were in love with this fantasy that Bowser painted these letters, Black Lives Matter on the plaza, and stood up to the bigot Trump, That fantasy is so intoxicating that a lot of people didn't want to give that up until they realized in 2025, maybe this is just who Mayor Bowser is.
Mm.
Let me follow up with this, Chuck. Just what I know we might be spending too much time on this topic, but I just want to follow up real quick with Chuck. You said something a while ago that you was reluctant to really press Bowser and expose the things that you saw, especially during the encampments, during the protests, because of the infatuation fantasy of her painting the letters on the ground, Black Lives Matter, and you didn't want to attack the black female mayor in that way, and you kind of was a little bit reluctant on really press. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you said something to that effect.
We had a private conversation, but I'm happy to expound on it because it's a good question. So I am probably covering the 2020. George Floyd uprising more than anyone at that time. I'm literally out there every day. At some point, I'll have a documentary. People will know about that. But there were so many times I never asked a question about Bowser. I rarely ever asked a question. And the person would say incredible things into my phone and then end with expletive Bowser. And I would cut that off. And it wasn't cutting that off. I'm not trying to censor people. And I'm not saying I never put out critiques of Bowser. But what I am saying is that I noticed if somebody said something really important that people needed to hear and they ended with an expletive of Bowser, that wouldn't travel anywhere. People didn't care. And then when I tweeted, when Trump's goons were in town for the first few weeks and beating people over the head in broad daylight, people were complimenting my coverage. Chuck, I love your coverage. Trump's America. You're exposing Trump's America. But when Trump's goons left and Bowser's MPD goons took over, maybe not as overt, maybe more doing it at 2 in the morning, at 4 in the morning, maybe more media savvy. When I was exposing what Bowser's people were doing and Bowser herself, the same people who were giving me credit for my great coverage didn't want to hear it anymore, didn't want to retweet it, didn't want to amplify it. They didn't want to mess with that fantasy that I mentioned about writing the letters Black Lives Matter on the plaza. Think about it. You have a black woman Democratic mayor standing up to the bigot Trump. I want to believe that. Like, that's a really cool thing to believe. And people didn't want to mess with that. So when I started showing the actual truthful critiques of Bowser, that means everything that they said preceding it would not be heard. So I made some maybe editorial decisions sometimes to say, let me remove Bowser so people understand what the problem is, and we'll deal with Bowser at another time. And sometimes I regret it, but sometimes I don't, because the times we were in, we really just wanted to focus on the police repression that was going on. So it's one of those things that I thought about all the time, but I believe now in 2025, people are seeing what we were seeing in 2020 quite deeply.
Well said.
Really important, though. I think it's really important. I just wanted you to explain it, because people are going to watch this. And they're going to say, oh, well, you know, you had the two white guys that are, you know, kind of bashing the sister, and, you know, and turn it off immediately. So I wanted you to explain how you actually was trying to tread very lightly for that reason. So yeah. I wasn't trying to put you on the spot. I know we didn't talk about it.
It's good. It's good. But when I'm interviewing, generally 90% are black protesters. So these, you know, I'm not interviewing, you know, a lot of white people on the street. This was the George Floyd uprising, and people just didn't want to hear that dynamic. They just didn't want to hear it.
You know, I got to come in and say that this discussion is precisely why people need to support The Collision and need to support WPFW. Sorry to jump in such a cheesy manner, but I was feeling it. I was feeling it as Chuck and Etan were talking, because no one's going to take it on like this. So our goal for the hour is $500. One of you could take care of that. That would be pretty easy. Just, you know, and I know some of you finding $5 is tough. And for you, I say that $5 means an incredible amount. It's all about, you know, trying to support the station. Please. So that's 202-588-9739, or go to WPFWFM.org. That's 202-588-9739, WPFWFM.org. The station's too important to let the jackals of corporate media take over the discourse frankly, from what you said just now, Etan, like, how many people are really going to take the time to talk through what these positions are, but then also take through trying to understand the psychology and the politics of who's making these critiques?
Right.
Because that part, and I know that's something that you're correctly very sensitive to. So, and that's so important, 202-588-9739. But as y'all know, also, I have to leave at the bottom of the hour because the whole back bumper of my car fell off. So I'd be really remiss if we didn't just talk a dollop of sports. Etan, you know how wired in I was to that NBA Cup final of the New York Knicks versus the San Antonio Spurs. The Knicks are my team. The Spurs have been my league pass team, which means that's who I'm watching. And I've said that I was one of the only people I know to predict them as a top three, top four team in the West. And the people were like, you're a year away. You're 2 years away. Well, boom, that one I had. And yet I feel like people are denigrating it on how wonderful that Knicks victory was in the aftermath. And that really burns my bacon.
Oh, it definitely. I mean, I'm looking at the, you know, across the
media. Does it burn your bacon?
Ooh, it burns my bacon.
Okay.
No, but they're really, I mean, it's not just like one person. It's not like just Barkley saying, oh, you know what I mean? NBA Cup, I don't like. But it's like a lot of media people. They're saying, oh, well, the Knicks are so happy. They haven't won in this long. Oh, well, they're going to hang a banner. I'm like, why are you doing all of this? Why are you hating because the Knicks won? Y'all are some haters. But Chuck, I wanted you to wait. Me and Dave talked about it a lot. Great conversation with man Brandon Scoopy. But I wanted you to weigh in on that. What do you see? What we're talking about, or you know, what is your response to it?
No, I mean, I do. I mean, I think, you know, the crowd you're talking about have been Knicks haters for a while, and maybe there's this feeling they're not for real. Maybe there is they're using the cup, and I'm not crazy about the cup that much either. But I think there's a general feeling also that has some legitimacy that all the loaded teams are in the West. That the West is just stacked, and the Knicks have a bit of an easier road. And I think there's truth to that, so that you can come out of the East, you could go to the finals, but the real test would be, can you beat the teams in the West? And I think there's fairness in that sense. At the same time, you know, beating up on the Knicks does get good ratings, and they know that gets good ratings. Sometimes beating up on the Lakers gets good ratings. So anytime you're talking about a big market team, they do know what they're doing.
I disagree.
Okay.
I disagree because you beat up on the Lakers because they with the Celtics are the most successful NBA teams in history. You beat up on the Lakers because they have the largest national fan base. You beat up on the Lakers because that's where the Fairweather fan goes. You know, the Dallas Cowboys fan becomes the LA Lakers fan. You know, we all know how that dynamic works. Yeah. And Mr. LeBron James has been criticized for that in the past, but I'll leave that alone. But when you come to me about the Knicks, we're talking about a team that hasn't won a title in 1973.
That's right.
Look, I feel very old most mornings. That means there has never been a Knicks championship in my lifetime.
That's right.
That hurts.
It does hurt.
And they actually now, for the first time since the 90s, look like they can go to the NBA Finals. And, Etan, you know my philosophy on that. Maybe they're not as good as the Oklahoma City Thunder, but you know all it takes is, you know, maybe one bad injury, one tweaked ankle, and all of a sudden it's a whole different ball game in terms of those finals. That's just part of the NBA. And so it's not something I wish for, but it's just a reality of the process and the project of trying to win a title. So I think people were getting on the Knicks because they wanted to mock the Knicks. No more, no less.
And No nuance.
I don't think there's any nuance. I think it's the equivalent of Charles Barkley and company kicking a puppy dog. All we're trying to do is grow up and be a big old pit bull. And we can't even get, I shouldn't use pit bull comments. All I'm saying is that I feel like when you mock the Lakers, you're sort of doing the right thing. It's sort of like mocking the king. Yeah. You mock the Knicks, it's like, I'm like, Come on, man. We're actually happy about something. How about you back off 3 feet? And they are stone cold liars if they say this cup didn't matter to those players, because those they were putting blood, sweat, and tears on that court.
Yeah, and 40 points from Jalen Brunson. After 35 points from Jalen Brunson, after 30 points and 33 points from Jalen Brunson. So he could get hot in any finals and anything could happen.
But, you know, it's interesting, though. I see a lot of people on social media actually mad when New York fans are happy and cheering. And you see the images of them in the New York bars and the sports bars and the streets. And they get mad. I'm like, why are y'all mad? Like, why are y'all upset that New York fans, when the Knicks play and play well, it brings all of New York together. All the different people.
What a great point.
Nationalities and races and opinions and everything like that. Everybody comes together and cheers for New York. That's how it was when I was growing up, when I was with my grandfather, who was a huge Knicks fan, so I called Grandpa Freddie. And we would go out in the street, and everybody would be high-fiving each other, you know, no matter where you are. And it's a beautiful thing. Why would you hate that?
Yeah. I got to tell you, I'm just back from about 4 or 5 days in New York, and my buddy said to me, you're going to see that there's a different vibe in the city because of the Knicks and how they're doing. And I was like, how can you really talk about a different vibe in a city of 8-9 million people? How can you even quantify that? Guess what? You can. I was on the train a lot. You saw the hats. Yep. You saw the jackets. Yep. You saw the vibe. You saw people giving each other a little chin, little chin, you know, like, what's up? I see you like those Knicks too. A beautiful thing for sure.
Wait, before you go though, Dave, I know you got to go in about an hour. Tell everybody about the grand opening in Brooklyn.
Oh,
you got to tell everybody.
I'll tell everybody about the grand opening, and then I'll tell folks how they can support WPFW. That'll be my good way. So, for folks who don't know, you know, very much inspired out there to try to create spaces for people to come together and organize. And my buddy had this. It's a small dive bar in Brooklyn. And it's now my small dive bar in Brooklyn. And we're going to use it to put on events. We're going to relaunch it December 28th. It's called Chilo's, C-H-I-L-O. People can look it up at Chilo's BK. It's just a place of mine that I wanted to say give love to right now. It's in New York. This is not a commercial. This is just letting people know what's going on in my life these days. And hopefully we'll do some live episodes and support WPFW at Chilo's as well. That being said, I really want to put on people's minds supporting the wonderful people here at WPFW, 202-588-9739, WPFWFM.org, the most important radio station on the dial, for no other reason than that we talk about issues. On this show, we talk about sports and politics, but we also talk straight politics, as you're going to hear in just a few minutes. We're a special place. This station is a special place, and frankly, one of the reasons why it's special is because it's listener-supported. If you don't support it, it doesn't exist. 202-588-9739, WPFWFM.org. Chuck, any words about WPFW before I say adios?
Oh, man, I love WPFW. We're here for a reason. Find me another sports show that is talking about what we're talking about. Find me another sports show that says Free Palestine with our chests out. Find me any other sports show that holds power to accountability. I don't see it. You know, when I look at corporate media, I see them doing the bidding of power. So, you know, it's an honor to be part of this great station.
Amen. Very well. Very, very well said. Yo, let's take a break. It's the bottom of the hour right now. Y'all are awesome. I will say this, too, just because we don't say it enough, Chuck. We're also, a lot of these shows have former athletes. We have the only show where the fact that the person is a former athlete is like one of like 15 things on their amazing resume. So you have all these shows with the former athlete who is only defined as a former athlete. And we have the person who in his early 20s put out a poetry book called More Than an Athlete. So we're happy to have him on this show only because he is this show. Etan Thomas, man, love and respect to you, man.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it. And love all the support that you've given me, both of y'all, over the years, over the decades now. Good Lord, it's been a long time.
Let's not talk about that.
Yeah, I said over the years, over the decades. That's definitely appreciate it. We're gonna keep going. We're gonna do more live events of different places. Different places are reaching out. You know, people are listening. You know, people are watching. People enjoy what they're seeing that we're doing on the Collision. So we have a lot bigger things to keep coming and keep adding.
Let's go. So let's go to a break right now at the bottom of the hour. Remember to support us. We only got about 375 to go. 202-588-9739 or WPFWFM.org. We're going to take a big break, a little break, I should say, but we are the Collision, where sports and politics collide.
So bleed. Emit light rap or emit teal. I drew a line without showing my body, that's a skill. Bad to the bone and the grill. You be dead wrong if looks kill. I'm still on my spiel in the spirit of El Hill. I own the Sparrow, nose like a Pharaoh's. I bloodline trill for the young and all the lils. We all gon' get meals. Talk a lot of game, but we get paid to like Jamil. Was raised upon a hill, the valley's a sunken place. I'm just trying to build like I came with some kettle weight. No, I'm a god MC, cause I made the devil wait. Boy, I brought hell, you ain't gotta tell me I'm hella great. I don't speak on it nowadays, I just meditate. Y'all can have the bars, I spit hard metal gates. Henry Louis Gates when I caught me some new estate. Make room for myself, I'm in a way different mental place. I keep it real, all y'all look anime. I'm fine like anime, black don't crack like Angela. Black and brave like N.A. It don't come with apologies.
Peace, and we're back on the Collision with Sports and Politics Collide. Chuck, I'm really looking forward to talking about Miss Janice. Tell us how you all connected and your history with her, because you've interviewed her a couple of times already before. So give us the background of it.
Yeah, I've interviewed Janice on the street a number of times. You know, I just stick a mic up to anybody who I think is saying something of importance and want to hear what that person is saying, whether they're a council person or not. The majority of people I interview aren't, you know, politicians, but if you're saying something of a substance, I want to know what you're saying. So a lot of times in protest spaces, she'd be out there and I would say, hey, Janice, what are your thoughts on the matter? That matter could be, we are covering the protests against the criminal overturn of the criminal justice code. So for those who don't know, the DC City Council had a 12-1 vote to change the criminal code in DC based on research and change that code to make it less harmful to young black kids who are criminalized and less punitive to young black youth who are treated like criminals from day one. And that 12-1 vote was overturned or overridden, let's say, by not only Biden, who was in office, but Mayor Bowser was against it. And it showed some of what happens in DC politics. But I believe she was out at a protest to keep DC having statehood and autonomy to pass what DC wanted to pass. So for me, that was a big moment where a 12-1 DC council vote didn't mean anything if big people wanted to overturn it. So it might be a protest like that. I focus on criminal justice and policing. That's just been, it's not the only thing I cover, but it's generally, you know, what I cover the most. And DC is one of the most over-policed and harshest criminal justice systems anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a problem. We have to keep fighting that. And whoever's going to be our next mayor, you know, should answer questions about that.
You know, last weekend I went to a correction facility with former teammate Javaris Crittenton. And that came up, that DC was one of the most criminalized and harshly. And I didn't know that. You know what I mean? Yeah. I heard it repeated. So I asked one of the people there, shout out to Free Minds. And I was like, I didn't know that stat. Tell me a little bit more about that. They were like, yeah, a lot of people don't know. But, you know, they have such a high level of youth offenders and what they're in there for. You see in other communities in different places where they don't end up in a correctional facility they did. You know what I mean? Not saying that what they're wrong, but they don't end up there. And they're like 14, 15 years old. Like that's the age of my children. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm looking at these baby faces and orange jumpsuits, and it just it hurts my heart. So having someone who has this topic on the top of their agenda and saying, we want to do something about this, that opens my ears immediately.
Ooh, me too, you know. And I'll just share one personal experience. I think this is back in 2016, 2017. I'm writing for the New York Daily News on sports at the time. And I had an article due, but I'm covering a mass protest, and it was on the steps. And basically, they gave me a choice, the police. They said, okay, we're going to arrest everyone. You could go inside and be arrested with everyone, or you could stay outside. And in this particular case, I'm like, all right, I'll take the arrest, because now I get 4 hours of interviews inside while people getting arrested. And I just made a calculation that that was worth the arrest, right?
Okay.
So I go, I get all these great interviews, and when I get... When they arrest everyone, they bring us 400 people. Most are out of towners, most white. And we go to a warehouse and we get plastic ties. And they practically given us milk and cookies and let everyone out at 11. However, they kept me and one other person because they found out when I was doing work in Ferguson, come to find out I got a warrant. I didn't know I got a warrant, but they don't let you pay traffic tickets. And anybody who's been to Ferguson knows that the most of the warrants are through traffic tickets that are unpaid, and I didn't have a way to pay it back, so now I got a warrant. And they sent me to the real jail, right? Not the kiddie jail that they have for the mostly white out-of-towner protesters. And when I go there, next thing I know, I'm in shackles. There's chains around my ankles. There's no distinction if somebody is triple homicide or jaywalking. And I'm looking around, and I'm like, everybody's black, but D.C.'s half white. What's going on over here? And the experience was so, you know, humiliating, from, you know, grabbing my crotch to every step to asking for my urine and my fingerprint and everything. And I refused some things. But the whole process really was worth maybe covering 100 protests, because it was so dehumanizing. And I always want other people to go through that process to know how racist the system is, but how dehumanizing the system is. And I tell people, you really only need a couple days in jail to understand this concept. You don't need to stay too long in a jail to know that humans should not be in those cages.
Wow. That's amazing. And you know,
and the closure to the story of time is the next day when I get out, I call up my editor. He's like, what's going on? You're supposed to file the sports story. And I'm like, see, what happened was I got arrested. And then he said, okay, write about it. And then I wrote about it, and I issued the story to the New York Daily News.
Oh, wow, that's a good editor.
Yeah, good editor, great editor. Eric Barrow, shout out to Eric Barrow.
Okay, yeah, that's a good editor. No, I'm definitely looking forward to this interview. You know, and there, you know, when I was looking at some of the videos, you know, on our social media, I encourage everybody to do that. She seems really genuine. Like, you know, sometimes you'll see politicians do a video and it looks like a political video. You know what I mean? It looks like they're, but she's like talking and she's like genuine and like, no, I grew up here. This is my connection. This is why I care about the community. This is why that I've been in the midst of the community all this time. It's a whole different feel. You know what I mean? Am I incorrect with that? Or is that the type of feel that you get as well?
I mean, no, that's the feel. Like I said, I've seen her at rallies that are blended in with activists. And, you know, you don't always see that. You know, you don't always see that, but you see that. And, I, you know, that's part of, I think, part of her background, you know, in the same, you know. And I think we're hitting a point right now where maybe people have, as Mamdani has shown, and, you know, I have some hesitations with Mamdani on some recent moves, but as he's shown, that the access to becoming a mayor is wider now than it was certainly 2 years ago. And that's the condition. And the people I give credit for that are protesters. The protesters have changed the climate. The protesters are not saying that we are just going to stick with anyone with a D by their name, have changed the climate of who can run. And that doesn't mean we don't hold them accountable, because what I would say about Mamdani is, doing a little backsliding, is that your job starts not when they win. Your job starts on the day they win, really, to make sure that they hold true to the promises that they kept. Because if you're going to run on a human rights platform, you're going to get a lot of bad people coming after you, trying to tear you down.
But that's the great thing about politicians like this that go to the people. Now, it's good to do all the other stuff, but going actually to the people and speaking to them, like you're coming here on WPFW, I think is great. So go ahead. We have our guest here. Please give her the proper introduction.
So happy to introduce Janice Lewis George, council member for Ward 4, longtime Washingtonian, graduate of D.C. Public Schools, graduate of Howard University School of Law as well. And the big announcement came in December that Janice Lewis George is running for mayor. So welcome, Janice.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Janice, I think the obvious question that you're going to always get first is, why did you decide to run for mayor?
Listen, I believe it is time to put people first. And this is a moment where we have to put people first. It's an incredible moment for us to really fight for a affordable DC in all the ways, fight for a safer DC, and really to have a government that isn't just working for the well-connected, is working for the people of the city in all 8 wards, making government work for all of us. And I believe it is possible for us to do that. I think it's necessary. I also think this moment calls for leaders who have moral clarity and who have courage. You can't sit on the sidelines. You got to defend your people and protect your community. I think the job of the mayor is to defend and protect your community. I think this moment is the moment that we need to do that now more than ever. DC's autonomy, DC's statehood is very much and always has been connected to democracy in this country as a whole. And it is time for us to fight for all of these things together and in a way where we're putting our people first and we're standing up for our community and our residents, all of our residents.
Well, if I can, go ahead, Tom, you got it, Tom.
Question, you know, we was talking a segment earlier about Mayor Bowser. And a lot of people in the community, you know, had a few different objections, issues with a certain ways that she conducted, which you're going to have with any politician. But I think you're going to get this question pretty much, you know, every time you speak someplace. What would you do differently than Mayor Bowser as the mayor of D.C.?
Yeah, listen, I think it's so important that in this moment, one, we have to speak truthfully about what's happening. And in order to speak truthfully about what's happening, you got to be on the ground and you got to see it. This is a moment to be in close proximity to your community and your neighbors. And if you are in close proximity to your neighbors and on the ground, like I have been, seeing families torn apart, seeing ICE taking individuals off our streets, and taking parents away from their children, taking people who are literally working their jobs, whether early childhood educators, whether landscapers, whether Uber drivers. It is one of the most heart-wrenching and things that will anger you the most is to see people in our community being racially profiled, kidnapped by ICE, and seeing the way in which our children are walking to school, seeing armed guards with automatic weapons, right? In this moment where that is happening, I believe the job of the mayor is to protect and defend its residents and to be crystal clear with the entire community of not only DC, but of this country about how it's impacting us. It's not beneficial to our community. It isn't making us safer. It's creating more harm. And so what I would do differently, one, is stand up and name that. This is not beneficial to our community. This is harmful to our community. And it's been harmful in the following ways. Being very clear and concise on that and making that message clear. The other thing is I think it's so important to build relationships and coalition. We should be building relationships and coalition across this country with other mayors who we are seeing stand up. Brandon Johnson, who is standing up in Chicago. Wes Moore, just next door, Governor Wes Moore, who is standing 10 toes down for Maryland and saying this isn't going to make us safe. What Trump is doing isn't about safety. You know, we've seen Brandon in Baltimore. We've seen Governor Newsom in California. So many of leaders across this country recognizing that this fight isn't just a fight by ourselves, but a fight for all of us across this country. So building those national coalitions and having an inside game. It's about being on the ground, not only in your community, but we got to be on the ground in Congress, right? The only way we are able to do what we do is we have a Congress that supports and understands what's happening here. And I got to tell you, you know, I've walked the halls of Congress over these last few months. And the number one thing I hear from Congress people and senators alike is, oh, this is the first time we're ever hearing from D.C. This is the first time elected leaders from D.C. are reaching out to us, explaining what's happening, explaining where they stand on what's happening to them, and asking for our support and our protection. We can't treat Congress as some sort of separate entity from us. Because we don't have statehood and because we are tied to Congress, we have to treat Congress as a constant relationship that we are present for and that we are building towards. And we have to use, as I've said again, every legal lever. I am a former assistant attorney general, so I know how strong our attorney general's office is. And I've been very crystal clear and working with Attorney General Brian Schwab. We should be working hand in hand with our attorney general and using every legal lever we have to fight back against this intrusion or our autonomy as district residents and fighting back for our civil rights and our civil liberties in this moment. And now is the time for us to do that. So what's different? I'm walking arm in arm with our attorney general and making sure that the conversations that are happening with the White House are happening alongside him and with him and using every tool we have to fight back. I'm working the grounds of Congress in a way that will be a constant building relationship with Congress people who come in and out of our city saying, welcome to Washington, D.C. We're happy to have you here. How can we help you? And here's how we need you to help us. Right. And being on the ground with our community, being crystal clear about what's happening and speaking for our community and how it's making our children feel, how it's making our neighbors feel and how it's creating a culture of fear and not a culture of safety and not real safety for our communities.
Yeah, I want to hone in on what you said and really Atan's question even a little deeper, because we've talked about this issue and we critiqued the mayor about this complying in advance issue. And yeah. I think that came to light really in 2025 for most of the world, whether it's Trump's federal takeover, whether it's removing tents of the unhoused, whether it's taking BLM off the plaza. But in reality, as someone who covers protests, I've been seeing this for a number of years. I saw it in 2020 where at some points the mayor was being harder on prosecuting protesters than even Trump's people. And then I saw it even last year amidst the campus raid of the George Washington University protesters fighting for a free Palestine. And at that time, you tweeted, D.C. is supposed to be a bastion for protests and exercising First Amendment rights. Cracking down on campus protesters to appease the MAGA Republicans in Congress is wrong and sets an incredible dangerous precedent for our city. Could you talk a little bit more about what would be the correct way to move forward rather than complying in advance?
Yeah, I mean, listen, these are the facts. Complying in advance has never, and I mean never, helped a community, especially under the type of leadership, authoritarian leadership that we are experiencing in the White House. What history has shown us, every time an authoritarian of this nature has come to a community, that complying in advance has done nothing but make them ask for more. You open the door and more happens, right? And so, and none of it has really protected us, right? Eliminating Black Lives Matter Plaza was supposed to earn us some credit. And guess what? We still had to deal with the fact that $1.1 billion of our budget we couldn't spend right after we did that. Right. So if we see like right after that, nothing, you know, it has not created a safety for our community. We have seen one of the things that's most heartbreaking, I think people have to speak about, is Alliance Healthcare, right? It wasn't a matter in reality of us not being able to fund Alliance Healthcare, but it was a reality that they said, oh, well, if we are providing healthcare for immigrant communities who may not qualify for regular healthcare, well, you know, the administration doesn't want to see us spending tax dollars on providing healthcare to these neighbors. What? Like, why would we comply in advance with that? And what did it earn us? Nothing. Because we still had Trump come in and say, oh, we're going to try to take over your police department. They're still trying to take our attorney general from us now. There's, you know, individuals trying to take our autonomy of our attorney general now as a result of this. Right. So complying in advance leads to nothing. It does nothing. It's a fake sense of security. But it also is us giving up autonomy in and of itself. There's no reason to have it symbolically have sort of, autonomy if it's not in reality, right? When we start doing things that are against our Sanctuary Values Act in our community, when we start not following our own community and our values, It doesn't do anything. It's hurting our economy, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that you have armed tanks and people at Union Station, the first thing people see when they come in, it's tanked our tourism. It's tanked our restaurant industry, and people don't want to go out and they're afraid of that, right? It has truly impacted our community. We've lost thousands of federal government workers have lost their jobs. That's a large percentage of our local economy. And these public servants have lost their jobs. What has it earned us, right? What we have seen, though, is when we fight back, when we use every legal lever that this administration has backed down, when communities have gone to court, when leadership have been unequivocal, we look at in New York, Letitia James on the same page, with Mamdani, right? Mamdani saying this attack on my attorney general cannot happen, right? So we've seen that when we have courage, when we exhibit moral clarity, and when we fight back, we actually see this administration back down in versus what we've been doing, which is complying and getting more and more things happening to us, and not just happening to us, but happening to our communities and our people that is making us less safe. And it's critical in this time. I want to talk about the young people and the protesters. It's so critical, right? I don't think people, they're realizing sort of the ways they are creating a relationship with law enforcement is being broken in, you know, ways that are just going to take years, right? Because now our young people are seeing law enforcement help with immigration enforcement. They're seeing enforcement attacking protesters and not doing anything about what is happening and speaking up against humanity. They're creating a distrust that they're going to have to try to rebuild over and over again. So it's important to embrace our young people, embrace what they are fighting for, and know that the humanity they are fighting for is a humanity worth all of us fighting for.
Wow. Wow. No, that is very well said. You know, our time kind of flew by here, but there's so many more questions I want to ask you. And the way that you're giving the answers that the people need to hear more of. And I want to really say this really quickly. You know, we asked over the past few weeks, Mayor Bowser, somebody from her team to come on the show and talk to the people. To explain, because she was taking a beating, and you know, especially after the DC takeover, and allow her to just explain her position, and they didn't want to do it, and we made one call to you, and then you came, and just you know, and I know that you've known Chuck before, and he's interviewed him before, but speaking to the people is so important. So I really want to commend you on that, and hopefully we get a chance to you know interview you another time, but really stay encouraged. I know you're going to be coming up a lot against a lot of forces that, you know, because of the situation, because of where we are with Trump, they're going to be coming for you. And I just really want you to stay encouraged, stay guarded, stay protected. And, you know, we need voices like this. We need people like you out here fighting for us. So thank you so much. Chuck, I'll let you close out, but thank you so much for coming on the show.
And I have one last one because it's a little bit hot off the press. Yesterday, Mayor Bowser named Jeffrey Carroll the interim police chief. There are a lot of protesters and people in the street who have questions about lawsuits regarding past kettling, particularly Swan Street and other protests. Not the big fan. I wanted to get your thoughts at this moment. I want to just get your thoughts. We got just about a minute left on Jeffrey Carroll being named interim police chief.
I will say this right now. We are in a critical moment where our community is feeling more and more distrust with law enforcement because of the immigration enforcement efforts, particularly and just because of sort of the history. And so this is actually a moment where we need to have MPD leadership that is going to be focused on rebuilding trust. And you're going to have leadership that is wants to be for the community, who understands that being an officer is also a part of being a public servant. And the people and building relationship with people is how you solve cases, is how you do better public safety, right? And I want to see someone who's going to be keen on fixing that culture, who's going to be address the culture that exists within the current MPD, with Black officers particularly feeling a lot of distrust, Black women officers who have been attacked and who have been let go. And so there's a lot of rebuilding that has to happen. And so we really need to see a real search for a leadership of MPD who's going to address transparency issues, the severe accountability issues, and improve the culture within MPD for officers who have felt that the culture, they have not addressed the culture. And you can't do that. You can't retain officers and bring officers in until you address the issues that are impacting them. And they want leadership that understands that and sees that. And that's the conversation I've had with people. So I hope we will see some transparency, some accountability, and some rebuilding of trust with our community.
All right. Thank you so much. Next time we have you on, we're going to have to talk a little bit of sports and the RFK Stadium.
I would love to do that. Yes.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on. Definitely appreciate it. All right. Bless.
Okay. 175 to go. Listen, that's easy. 175 to go. I don't believe there are other stations doing what we are doing here at WPFW. So please help out. And Katia, I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add. Okay, and you want to close us out?
Yes. This is great. This is the way that we, bringing to the people these type of conversations. We only have these conversations on WPFW, really. I don't see them on other stations. We're going to be doing live events and having these conversations. It's really important. And I really wanted to say shout out to WPFW. Please continue to support, because we have the freedom and the flexibility to go where other stations can't go. They can't do this. They can't do what we do. You know, we're talking about sports and we're talking about politics. We're talking about things that directly affect the community. We talk about racism. We talk about all of those different things. And that's why it's important to continue to support WPFW. So thank you. I know we went over time, but we'll be back more with more of these discussions on The Collision, where sports and politics collide. Peace.
1-800-222-9739, 202-588-9739. Or you can Cash App us at #WPFWFM.
Supporting WPFW. When you make a pledge, you'll receive a short survey with your receipt or on our website or in an upcoming e-blast. Please take a few moments to share your thoughts. Your feedback helps strengthen our programming, better serve our community, and keep WPFW strong. We truly value your voice.
Thank you to everyone who supported WPFW on Giving Tuesday. Your generosity helps keep independent, listener-supported radio strong. If you weren't able to give earlier this week, there is always time. Every contribution at any level helps sustain the music, culture, and progressive voices you hear on WPFW every day. Our end-of-year drive begins Sunday, December 14th. For listeners with IRAs, this is also a reminder that year-end required minimum distributions are approaching. A qualified charitable distribution may be a meaningful way to support WPFW while meeting your RMD. However you choose to give, thank you for standing with community, people-powered radio. Please call 202-588-9739 or visit WPFWFM.org to learn more. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. For nearly five decades, support from listeners like you has kept WPFW's wheels rolling. In fact, the single largest category of donations comes from those who donate an unused car to the station. That's right, running or not. Even a car sitting idle that needs thousands of dollars in repairs can do wonders for WPFW. If you can't drive it, donate it. WPFW will get the proceeds, and you'll get a tax break. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Award-winning former police officer and criminal justice adjunct Professor Garland Nixon hosts News Views Fridays at 6 p.m. Tune in to hear a refreshing angle on today's state of affairs and other issues other media intentionally overlook. Find the episodes on iTunes Podcast and Google Play Music. Only on your station for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, Washington.
I'm Candy Shannon, host of Morning Brew, the Friday edition, from 5 to 8 a.m. on member-supported WPFW Washington, 89.3 FM.
You're listening to a program previously aired on WPFW. While this is not a live broadcast, we're proud to bring you this encore presentation filled with the same